This is Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen, the top economists and experts on the topics you want and you need to understand. Here's your host, Gillian Bowen.
Hello and welcome. This week, our economists are back just when we need them. Boy, there's been a lot of key economic data released that impacts you. We're going to pick it apart to ensure you know what's going on. Have you been hearing a lot about inflation and what it might mean for the interest rate on your mortgage? There's also been house price research, which we're going to analyse, and I want to have a look at employment and unemployment in Australia right now. The aim is always making money easy. So to help me help you, welcome back Joe Masters, Chief Economist at EY, and Stephen Koukoulas, Managing Director at Market Economics. Fantastic to be with you. It's been a while since we talked about inflation on the podcast. Joe, why don't we start with a quick explanation of what it is?
Sure. So we got inflation data last week, and we call that the Consumer Price Index. And basically what that does is imagine a shopping trolley of all the goods and services that households across Australia buy. And we weight them depending on how much of the household budget they take. And it gives us a sense of the rise of generalized prices or cost of living in the economy. And all around the world, we've seen a lift in inflation as we've come through this pandemic. And the same is happening here in Australia. We had headline inflation at 3.5% annually. So prices are 3.5% higher than they were 12 months ago. And in economics, we also talk about underlying inflation. And that's where we try to remove some of the prices that interest rates can't control, that we know perhaps are temporary. And that's also running pretty fast at 2.6% annually, fastest rate since 2014.
Stephen, what is it in the numbers for you that stood out and what does it mean?
We know that the Reserve Bank, when they look at monetary policy, so the interest rates that they set when they're trying to manage the inflation outlook, is a target between 2 and 3%. In annual terms. And as Joe just pointed out, the headline figure is above 3%. The underlying momentum, the underlying price momentum, 2.6%, and on its way to 3% quite clearly, because we've got very low numbers dropping out of the year-on-year run rate. So what it means is that the increase in inflation that we've been witnessing around the world, the US in particular, but also in New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Canada, you know, there's a global issue going here. It's not peculiar to Australia, but what happens when we had basically all the central banks in the world effectively cutting interest rates to zero? We had them printing lots of money, the quantitative easing approach they took when COVID came along 2 years ago to support their economies during those very, very difficult times for health, and banks running large budget deficits. That cumulative effect of all that policy stimulus is feeding into, well, what is actually a healthy economy. Unemployment rates are low around the world, and with that, prices are going up, and that is the inflation momentum. So the question now for the Reserve Bank and other central banks around the world, with inflation increasing back to or above the target range, is what happens to interest rates? And I think we all know the answer. They're going up. The debate is when and by how much.
Mm. Let's get into that further in a little bit. But Joe, in regards to inflation and what it is at the moment, what families and households and people are experiencing at the moment, is it an issue that prices are rising at the rate that they are rising at?
So on the one hand, you want some level of inflation in your economy. It's a sign of a healthy economy, an economy that's growing. But there are a few things that are concerning. The first one is inflation for essential goods and services, the things that we have to consume, healthcare, education, fuel for cars, for example. That's rising much faster than for discretionary goods. And for households on low incomes, that means their budget's being squeezed, particularly because wage growth in Australia is still quite low. So when we look at that comparison, we've got real wages going backwards. So your wage growth is going up slower than prices are going up. And that's particularly hurtful for those households at the lower end of the spectrum.
Hurts is a good word there. It really does hurt. Stephen, why are those essential items, those essential services, those essential goods, why are they getting more expensive?
Well, it appears as though there's both supply and demand. And sorry to talk like an economist, but there are clearly some supply chain issues that everybody's alert to, that it's hard. That there's been what we call a dislocation in some product markets as a result of the COVID crisis. So freight rates are increasing and firms have to recoup their costs by putting up their selling prices. So that is, by definition, inflation. And we know demand in the economy is strong, that we consumers, we've got plenty of cash, we've got a positive wealth effect, employment is running strongly, the unemployment rate is very low. So our job security has, in a way, all of a sudden improved dramatically. So we're feeling confident about our spending decisions. So that demand is allowing firms to put up their prices. And the chicken and egg issue with wages is that as wages are starting to lift, so it appears, that is actually a very important cost for business, and the way that they cover those higher labour costs, if the economy is strong enough, is by putting up selling prices. So again, inflation.
Mm. Look, now, considering we've got a bit of an understanding about what inflation is, what's happened in the latest reading of inflation, Joe, there's a very important RBA Reserve Bank board meeting coming up. Obviously, this is going to be on their agenda. Why is it on their agenda? And then what may they be inspired to do?
Yeah, so the next week is really big. We've got a board meeting, as you said, but we've also got a key speech by Reserve Bank Governor Lowe. And then on Friday next week, an update set of forecasts and narrative about the economy from the Reserve Bank. So it's a really important week. The reason they worry about inflation is it's part of their mandate. As Stephen talked about, the RBA look to keep inflation on average over time within 2 to 3%. They also have a couple of other objectives. One is around full employment. So we want, you know, Australians in jobs and also the well-being of Australians. And we often think about that in terms of financial stability, making sure that households don't have too much debt, aren't getting into too much trouble. So with inflation at these sort of levels, as Stephen said before, we've got headline inflation above the band, we've got underlying inflation just above the middle of the band and heading higher. So when one of those mandates is met, you need a policy response. Now, next week, we're expecting the Reserve Bank to announce an end to their bond buying program, that quantitative easing program that has kept interest rates, long-term interest rates, lower. For mums and dads, that means that sort of impacts, I guess, your fixed mortgage rates rather than your variable rate. So we're expecting them to announce that to finish. We're not expecting a rate hike next week because we haven't quite met sufficient conditions effectively. The Reserve Bank want to see inflation sustained higher and they want to see wage growth higher so they're confident that inflation doesn't fall back in. Bear in mind, the last 10 years or so, we've been fighting too low inflation, not too high inflation. But rate hikes are coming. We know that. We can argue about the timing, but rate hikes are coming and we're already seeing fixed mortgage rates rise. And at some point, we will see variable mortgage rates rise as well.
Stephen, there has been, yes, I guess you could almost run a betting market on which bank's predicting which month the RBA is going to raise rates. But putting that aside, what do rate rises do to families and households? And the people that we've got listening along right now, they'll be thinking about it. It's, you know, saying interest rate rise is almost like having the boogeyman hiding in your closet. Like it's all meant to be super scary. But what does it mean for households?
It's actually a good news story. I'll answer this by going back to why they cut them to 0.1% and why everyone with a mortgage now should be paying only about 2.5% to 3% on their mortgage. The RBA cut those rates to 0.1%, you know, roughly 18 months ago, because they were forecasting the unemployment rate to increase to 10 to 15%, around about that level, you know, with the coronavirus impacting us all. They thought that inflation was going to stay at 2% or less for the next few years because of this recession, frankly, the recession that we saw in 2020 and even that dip in GDP that we saw in 2021. So they cut rates to those at that incredibly low level. And of course, the banks passed it on. And for mortgage holders in both fixed and variable interest rates, they're paying interest rates never before seen in Australia's history. And so when you think about it, it was because the economy was bad was feared to be bad. So when the RBA come out in the months ahead, and as Joe said, picking the timing is always a difficult issue, but you know, they're going up. I'm more confident about my forecast for this time next year than next month, to be frank, because I know they're going up. But it's because the economy's improved. And when Dr. Lowe, the RBA governor, gets up and talks in the coming weeks about the interest rate pressures, he could rightly say, we've achieved our objective for near full employment and our inflation target 18 months to 2 years earlier than we thought. It's good news. I'm preferring the fact that we have to hike interest rates. Now, for those folk who've got a mortgage, oh, you groan and think, oh, I've got to pay, you know, an extra quarter or an extra half a percentage point on my mortgage. But it's because unemployment's low, it's because wages growth is likely to be lifting, and it's because the economy's better than was feared. Put it this way, near zero interest rates are not a reflection of a good economy. Interest rates at, let's say, 2 or 3% in the current climate are probably reflective of the economy doing well.
So it's all about how we think about it. We've got to perhaps be a bit more zen about our view on rising interest rates. But that's actually not a bad segue. It's hard to be zen when home values are at eye-watering levels. I guess it depends where you buy. But the median price for a house in Australia has soared past $1 million. $1 million. That's according to research from Domain. Nationally, house prices rose 25.2% in 2021. Six out of eight capital cities hit record house prices during the December quarter. And if you're living in Sydney, brace yourself. The median is $1.6 million. Joe, what's the significance of the median house price for the country punching through $1 million?
So in some respects, that's just a number. It's a big number. It's a round number. You add another zero on. So it tends to get a lot of airplay. What we have seen, though, is a very sharp rise in house prices. And most importantly, you need to think about house prices relative to income, right? So $1 million isn't just a number. It's your ability to afford it, right? So it's a housing affordability and a housing accessibility issue that we have in Australia. And when prices rise with those sort of magnitudes, that 20, 30%, and wage growth is running at less than 3% a year, you're locking more and more and more people out of the market. And mostly they are young Australians trying to get on the property ladder. We know that it's not the ability to service a mortgage because interest rates are very, very low. It's the ability to save that whopping 20% deposit. And when prices go up so fast, the deposit goes up, but your wage growth isn't going up. So you're scrambling and scrambling and scrambling to save that deposit. It's a serious social and sort of equity issue that we have in Australia. And I would argue one of the biggest intergenerational issues that we need to try and address. It's also not unique to Australia. And some of it comes about from, I guess, what Stephen was talking about. We've had this period of really low interest rates, of central banks printing money, money sloshing around the world, looking for returns. Mm. And it's piled into housing, also equity markets, and also things like cryptocurrencies, for example. So in effect, it's a side effect of what we've done to try to support the economy. Now, as interest rates rise, some of the heat should come out of the housing market. We're already seeing that. But the underlying dynamics are still, we have a constraint on housing supply, particularly in cities like Sydney, where there's geographical constraints, there's lots of planning and regulation issues, and really rapidly rising population growth.
Well, and it is an underlying issue, and it seems like an ingrained issue, which then Stephen has me saying, why do we even keep talking about it? It feels like we make no difference. It feels like every month we report some record and then nothing changes. And now I feel like I'm being too pessimistic.
Nothing changes. You're quite right. And we know the political difficulty of it, as we saw at the last election when Labor tried to bring in reforms to negative gearing and capital gains tax concessions. They got soundly beaten, and the analysis that I think's done the rounds is that that cost them dearly. So, and I think other people have made the point that, you know, two thirds of people in Australia have a house outright or have a house with a mortgage. So they've got a vested interest seeing the value of their house going up. And it's really only a small proportion, somewhere between 5 and 10% of the people who are currently renting or living with mum and dad, who are actually looking to tap the market. So when you think about policies that will dampen house prices relative to income growth, as Joe was quite rightly pointing out, it means that the 2/3 of the population are going to be financial losers, if you like, from that policy reform. Now, a lot of people who have bought a house are happy to have that reform. They, you know, people who have bought a house that's now worth lots of money are saying that's absurd. My kids can't buy a house and other people's kids can't buy a house. And that intergenerational inequality that Joe was talking about is a very real issue. There's no question about that. So, but the policies that you need to fix it, if you like, and that includes tax policy changes on negative gearing, it includes building plentiful supply of both social housing as well as private sector housing too, are not palatable. And the zoning laws, there's a myriad of issues here, but changing those laws is not a vote winner. And that's why we keep talking about it, and we'll keep talking about it, I dare say, for some time to come.
This is then, seems like another lesson in changing how you think. So if you're upset about house prices being too high, and then there's a politician suggesting they have a plan to bring them down, maybe we need to vote for them instead of letting them fail. Anyway, I'm not giving political advice. That's not what I do. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have a look at the real-time data and what it's telling us about the state of the economy. It's interesting, I promise.
You're listening to Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen.
Who knew talking tax could be so jovial? This is wonderful.
The top economists and experts.
Employment is one of the most important indicators of stress in the economy.
On the topics you want.
Look, at the end of the day, we need to learn to live with the virus.
And you need to understand.
The aim is always making money easy.
Oh, you're starting with one of the tough ones.
What's a trustee?
Well, that's a good question. It is unusual.
What are your tips to avoiding a tax scam?
Making Money Easy.
Thanks, Gil. Thanks for having us on the podcast.
With Gillian Bowen is the podcast literally making money easy.
Shall we dive into a bit of the lingo?
Follow today and watch your brain expand.
Thank you, Gil.
Thanks for having me. No, I'm kidding.
Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen, powered by Bowen's Garage.
Thank you for listening to the pod and coming along for the journey into the world of money. Lots of you have been getting in touch, and many of you have admitted you don't know how to review or rate the podcast in Apple Podcasts. So I've recorded a little how-to video and put it on my Instagram. So make sure you go and check that out, because the ratings and the reviews help. Right. So back to Joe Masters and Stephen Kukulis. They are our economists this week. And I want to talk about some updated figures we have on the state of employment in Australia. The headlines sound pretty spectacular. 65,000 people found jobs in December. The unemployment rate has fallen to 4.2%. The Bureau of Stats says that's the lowest unemployment rate since August 2008, just before the start of the global financial crisis. And monthly hours worked have also increased. And there's good news too for youth unemployment. The figures are from just before the Omicron wave. Joe, what can't we see in these figures?
Well, the biggest issue at the moment is they're a bit dated. So those data are for December, as you said, and we've now got a country that's in a shadow lockdown. And we know what happens in lockdowns. We've had enough of them now that we really understand them. So the labour market's likely weaker than it was before, and we have less support for those that have lost their jobs than we had through 2020 and 2021. So that's important. I actually, though, think Omicron is more of a blip than a U-turn for the economy. All the underlying conditions still suggest that as we get through these sort of wave of infections, and we know that lots of people are isolating with COVID, isolating as close contacts, looking after people that are sick, they can't go to work, lots of businesses struggling to fill shifts, can't open for as many hours as they would like. So there's a lot of disruption at the moment. But the good news is that the fundamentals underlying the economy are really, really sound. And as we've seen in other lockdowns, in time, I expect the economy will bounce back. So those data are dated. It's probably weaker than that at the moment, but it's sort of, I guess it's almost a point that Stephen made before. I'm more confident about how things look in 6 months and how they look next month, if you like. So I think we do need to remain optimistic. And we've had a very jobs-rich recovery. We've had very strong female employment, very strong youth employment. We've got participation in the labour market. So that's people that are working or available and actively looking for work at record highs. And we know that that's good economically, but we also know that it's good for people. We know there's lots of social and mental well-being benefits of working as well. So those things are really, really positive.
Stephen, for people who then are living in the economy right now and are experiencing the things that Joe talked about, what does that do for when consumers are deciding what they're going to do with their money?
Employment is one of the most important indicators of stress in the economy. And when you think about it in very simple terms, if you're unemployed, you're going to be struggling to spend money on your most basic requirements, rent and food. Let's just leave it at that. If you're unemployed and you're on the dole, you don't have much money, you don't have much capacity for those very basic things. When you have a job and you're earning decent money and or you are getting a pay rise because the labour market's dynamic, you're feeling pretty good. And that link to the labour market, and it's why I'm so pleased that there's been a real refocus on the labour market side of the RBA and even the federal government's mandate on economic policy for the budget and these sorts of things. That, you know, it's always fight inflation first and employment will sort itself out and all those other sort of cliches that we've seen in years gone by. But when I look at the labour market numbers and how they are a social indicator as well as an economic indicator, as an economist, I love seeing full employment. I love seeing a strong jobs number and a low unemployment rate getting printed. And as Joe said, a high participation rate, because it's a sign that people have got jobs, they're earning money, they're adding to the economy. So economic growth, which sort of has a multiplier effect through the economy. So the policy strategy to see people with a job is a very important social issue. And alas, of course, the people who are currently locked out of employment now, who are staying home because of COVID, they might be casual workers and are earning no money, they're going to be doing it tough for the next couple of months until they get healthy or their family members get healthy and they can return to the paid workforce.
I think, though, there's also, besides people having jobs or for people who haven't lost jobs, there's also a bit of people just not going anywhere or not doing anything or not spending any money in the cafe or the business because they are worried about getting sick or making someone close to them sick. Or for my example, you know, our little boy is starting school next week. So we've kind of really shut down what we're doing so that we don't miss out on that first day. Joe, when, and there would be small business owners listening along to us now going, oh my gosh, we need people in our business to spend their money. Do we start to see the impact of this month at all in the growth that's going on in the economy, or will it just be a tiny little, you know, blip?
It will have an impact, absolutely. So there's a few things going on, but as you said, we know that even though households are cashed up, they've saved a lot of money over the last 18 months, there is for some a hesitancy to be out and about. Now, you might sit at home and purchase goods using online shopping, so that doesn't change so much, but spending in cafes, going to the cinema, going to the gym, those sorts of things, there's a lot of people for a variety of reasons that don't want to expose themselves. So that shadow lockdown concept, you're not being told you have to stay at home, but you're choosing to do that. And when you do that, we know that spending on services, accommodation and food, hospitality, arts and recreation, that collapses. So that's happening. We also know that lots of businesses are really struggling to open because their workforce is so disrupted. Mm. So that will also impact economic activity, right? So we think about in economics, hours worked. If you're not working any hours, you're not generating any economic output. So Omicron will have a hit to March quarter GDP, the growth numbers. It's pretty hard at the moment to put a number on that. We're flying a bit blind. We don't have any actual data. Forecasting is hard at the best of times, but it's particularly hard at the moment. You talked before about the real-time data. So we can see there's been a significant hit to consumer confidence. It's actually stabilized and come back a little bit in the last week, but still well below the levels that you would want to see it at. It's still down around the levels when we were locked down for Delta. We've had a big hit to business confidence as well. And when people are not feeling confident, they typically don't extend their spending. So that will have an impact. We can also see from Google mobility data, for example, that people aren't out and about. And also the big commercial banks released their bank spending data, the card and account data. And again, that showed a really big hit early in January. It's stabilized a little bit now.
Stephen, how long then can businesses hang on if you're a small business owner? I mean, I don't operate one, so I'm not sure what the cash flow is like or how many weeks they can go without getting any actual coin. How long before businesses start collapsing, or am I, again, being too pessimistic?
Yeah, that's always a tough call, and it depends on the business and it depends how lucky you are, and it's more luck than good management at the moment. How many people are going to venture out and have a coffee, pick up a takeaway meal, or eat at your premises, or go to the movies, go to a sporting event? So impossible to say at this stage, but we do know that we want that mobility to improve. We want people to go out, and areas like the tourism sector too is still doing it very tough. Now, we Australians have learned to travel within our own borders, I suppose. So we're not going to Bali or Boston or Belgium, to use a bit of a alliteration there, but yeah.
Not too many people are getting on the plane to Boston. But
we're not travelling overseas, but we are travelling within our borders. We still want to do something, like we're jumping in our car and driving around because it's safe for our health. We're not going to catch COVID in our car. So, but nonetheless, we want people out and about to spend money. It sounds like a very cliche thing in a sense, but that is economic growth. And it's what people want to do. In the long run. So if you're a small business owner going through a tough time right now because no one is going to your business or buying much online or whatever, it's just a matter of holding your breath until we return to some sort of normalcy. A lot of small business owners too, I've noted in recent times, this is not just the current Omicron lockdown or in shadow lockdown, as Joe nicely calls it. It's that we are buying from the big click and collect or the big home delivery people. So the small business owners who probably don't have the pricing power, the discounting power, or the capacity to sort of load up, you know, thousands of products for distribution are doing it tough, where the big people, the big end of town, I don't like that term, but the big end of town are doing fine. The big retailers are doing well. The smaller ones are doing it tough.
Mm. And so then, Joe, one final point I wanted to then make on this is Omicron's not going to be the last variant that we have of coronavirus. What then is your suggestion as an economist on what the economy can do, what households can do, what businesses could do to ensure their future? It's a big question.
It's a big question, and it doesn't have a simple answer. Look, at the end of the day, we need to learn to live with the virus. Now, I'm not a health expert. I've learned a lot about health in the last 18 months, a bizarre amount. But, you know, that move from pandemic to endemic, and Omicron is a step in that direction, right? So it's no longer a shock when someone says to you, oh, I've got COVID. Mm. 6 months ago, that was a, what, really? You know, so, and we've got a variant that's highly contagious, but in a highly immunized population, not proving to be as deadly, not entirely not, but, you know, and as I understand it, this is typical for viruses. They become less severe, but more contagious. And that's how you learn to live with them. And it is important that we've had this really strong vaccination program, and we do need to see people getting boosted. We do know that that helps to reduce the stress. So look, for households, over time, we're just going to learn. We're not going to worry about it in the same way as we don't worry about getting the flu. We know that we've got sick leave. We just get more confident with it. And we've got all this savings. Households have saved about $250 billion since the start of the pandemic. And they've put about $70 billion into their mortgage offset accounts. So households have lots of money to spend. So once they get confident to be out and about, I actually think we've all spent on lots of goods. I mean, I've renovated parts of my home. There's only so many new TVs or sofas you're going to buy.
Need and we're another gonna, couch.
We're gonna, You don't. And so you're going to go out and spend on services, right? And we are.
Experiences.
We're going to go out and,
yeah.
We're going to travel and we're going to go to the theatre and we're going to do the things that we haven't been able to do in the last few years and we really enjoy. For businesses, things are really tough. I think for small business, things are really tough at the moment. We know that there's an ending of support. We know they're facing workforce disruption. They've got a demand hit because people aren't out spending. And they've had a really tough 18 months and there's a lot of fatigue out there. So we haven't seen this sort of wave of insolvencies yet, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some increase in insolvencies over the next 6 months or so. But I hope businesses can hold on because we will learn to live with this, and the economy may look a bit different, but we will get through this, and Australia is actually in really good shape when that happens.
Lots of things to then think about going forward from all of that. I appreciate that. Look, we're almost running out of time, Stephen. Then any observations from you about what's ahead, and or have I missed anything we should be talking about right now as we kick off the new year?
I think we've covered off some fantastic things, but for me, the really interesting issue as we negotiate 2022 will be the inflation interest rate dynamics. Now, that sounds perhaps a little bit boring, but I think we've got used to basically two decades of persistently low inflation, relatively low wages growth, and an inability to get the economy to full employment, therefore in wages and interest rates zero will not be sustained. So my thought process as we go through the year, and the markets, while it's pricing in rate hikes, for example, I'm wondering, just as we got shocked over the last 5 years that rates could never fall to zero, could they? Well, they did. I'm wondering that if we'll start having a debate through this year, interest rates can never get back to 5 or 6 or 7%, can they? I'll leave it there.
Joe, what about you? Any observations as we kick off the year?
Couldn't agree more. Inflation, interest rates, and I think the labour market, I mean, right now the disruption, but over time this skill shortage that we're starting to see right across the economy are the two biggest issues facing business. I'm just going to throw a third one out there, and that is we do need to make sure that we take this opportunity to come back better. I'd like to see policy that drives a more sustainable, more inclusive, more equitable economy than perhaps we had prior to COVID. And we haven't done that policy work yet.
It's a chance for a good reset. Look, that's all we have time for. Don't forget to check out my Instagram for that video on how to review and rate the podcast. It all helps. And there's some other good stuff on there too. You can find me by searching at Gillian H. Bowen. Thank you, Joe Masters and Stephen Kukulis, for being the smartest people in my room this week.
Thanks for having me back.
A lot of fun. Thank you.
You've been listening to Making Money Easy with Gillian Bowen, powered by Bowen's Garage.